Now, state lawmakers are planning to vote today on a number of Republican-backed proposals, including some aimed at limiting the powers of Governor-elect Tony Evers and incoming Attorney General Josh Call. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee advanced the plans yesterday on party line 12-4 votes. Those measures include a lot of things, including shortening the window for early voting, making Evers get legislative approval to ban guns in the state capitol, preventing Evers and Call from pulling Wisconsin out of the multi-state Obamacare lawsuit, and a lot of others. GOP leaders dropped a bill, however, to move the 2020 presidential primary from April to March because they said it didn't have enough support. Democrats like Joint Finance Committee member Chris Taylor of Madison say Republicans are trying to repudiate last month's elections.
I have to say, it's a very sad day when we have the Wisconsin Elections Commission certifying the results of the November 6th election. On the same day, we have an extraordinary session to actually take away the powers of the newly elected governor and the newly elected Attorney General.
Republicans say they're looking to balance power between the legislature and the executive branch. Arnold Schober is an associate professor of government at Lawrence University. Arnold, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, you've been watching Wisconsin government for some time now. How unprecedented, how unusual is this extraordinary session, or does it kind of fit in with past practice as you see it?
Well, extraordinary sessions are extraordinary. We don't see them often. It's been many years since we've had one here. Usually they're called to take up really special and tailored pieces of legislation, often dealing with budgets that haven't been finished in time and this kind of thing. In terms of nationally, though, there have been a lot of comparisons made to North Carolina, which its legislature did similar kinds of things after a Democrat, its Republican-controlled legislature did similar things after a Democrat was elected in the last election cycle. So that part of this isn't unprecedented, but certainly in Wisconsin we haven't seen a legislature so clearly take on really specific policies that they don't want the incoming governor to touch.
Republican Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said in a news conference yesterday that this is just how lame duck sessions typically go. Here's a listen.
Well, once again, the process has to work, and I think this is part of that process, just like it was when Senator Decker convened the Senate back in 2010 in that lame duck. So people are outraged. You know, I'm not sure where that's coming from right now. This is a lame duck session is a lame duck session.
He's comparing this to 2010 when Democrats tried to pass a specific piece of legislation, overdue union contracts for state workers. This is a comparison a lot of Republicans have made. What do you make of that?
I think it's a reasonable comparison in that that was supposed to prevent Scott Walker from taking what became Act 10 and putting that into place. But this one is much broader. You see some of those bills trying to restrict severely the power of the Attorney General in particular, and several different pieces of legislation about what Tony Evers isn't allegedly going to be doing now because of the bills should they pass. So it's much more broad-based than that previous special session. And yeah, I think it really shows kind of that the level of animosity between both political parties. Fitzgerald, I believe, today said he doesn't trust Evers. Evers has tried to say that he's willing to work with him, but I'm not sure that other Democrats would extend that same olive branch. So what we're seeing is kind of the depth of where Wisconsin politics has really gone.
We saw Jim Doyle, former governor, also former attorney general, weigh in on this lame duck. He's not a guy who does a lot of interviews since he's been governor, or honestly, while he was governor in a lot of ways. He talked about possible legal challenges to this, especially over this idea, I think, of the legislature having its own power to represent Wisconsin in a legal sense, taking away some of that power from the attorney general. What are you looking for in terms of possible court battles if a lot of these things pass?
Well, certainly the Attorney General is going to try to suggest that the legislature is usurping a constitutional role. There was some analog actually with Jim Doyle back with Tommy Thompson when Thompson tried to take over the state superintendent's office. And the Wisconsin courts eventually came down and said Thompson couldn't, through the legislature, take another constitutional office. There could be some parallel there if the legislature is effectively trying to tell the Attorney General how to do his job. You could see kind of an interbranch comparison there.
Now, this is something that's happening right after we just had an election. Is this something, or there's not another election now for 2 years, is this something that voters are going to remember come, 2020?
It's unlikely that they'll remember it, especially because many of the bills are fairly technical. And while they sound like top-ticket items now, with the exception of the Attorney General bills, I should say, but I think voters will largely forget. There will be a new issue. There will be a presidential election that year, which I'm sure will take most of the oxygen out of the room.
That said, are these significant, people have been using the word sweeping changes, are these significant limits to the power of the governor and the Attorney General, or are these just little, dents around the edges?
For the Attorney General, it's very significant. It effectively would empower the legislature to do his job in deciding who's going to sue or defend the state from lawsuits, and that is constitutionally at the moment anyway, and legally the Attorney General. For Tony Evers, they are more kind of around the edges. Yes, they'd prevent him from making some changes to Badger Care or going after more Affordable Care Act things. But they didn't go after the veto power, for example, which would have been a major dent in Evers' powers going forward. Because in Wisconsin, the governor has the strongest line item veto in the country. It's been toned back slightly since Tommy Thompson used it to strike out letters. They didn't go after that. But certainly the Attorney General changes are sweeping and very significant.
We're talking about the state legislature's lame duck session with Arnold Schober, associate professor of government at Lawrence University in Appleton. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the various bills state Republicans are working to pass, introduced the language unveiled on Friday, aiming for votes starting today? Are they denying the results of last month's elections, or do you see them fairly balancing out power in state government? And is there a particular issue you're seeing here that you're worried about, or big picture, are you worried or glad to see lawmakers trying to restrict the powers of incoming elected officials? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the lame duck session in the state legislature. Arnold Schober is with us, associate professor of government at Lawrence University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to this whole extraordinary session? Do you see it as sour grapes on behalf of Republicans, or should they be able to pass whatever they want before their term ends? Which proposal stands out most with you and why? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. To your calls now, Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you. I was going to say that I think this is a further attempt to undermine democracy. I'm all for balance between powers, but I'll point out that for the last several years, the state legislature has basically rigged their own elections through gerrymandering, so they don't actually represent the will of the people. And they're trying to take away power from people who were actually honestly elected. For issues, the whole Obamacare thing was very much discussed in the election, and people voted on that the way they chose. And I think there's probably more details in this that we just haven't heard about, but we ought to take a look at it.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. Arnold, some people have said, some of these issues like the Obamacare lawsuit were part of the political conversation during the election, and this is kind of pulling the rug out from under the results. Is there something to what Nate's saying there?
Certainly, Obamacare was widely discussed here and around the country, and people's views on that have warmed up somewhat since its initial adoption long ago. And it is, I think it's fairly clear that the legislature, the Republican-controlled legislature, is worried that Evers would carry through with his campaign promises to expand access through that program and make some other changes that Walker had not wanted. And this is their small window to prevent him from doing that. And whether that's democracy or something else, I'll let others decide. But certainly they are I'm worried that he would be able to continue on his plans.
Nate, thanks for the call. Go to Elaine now in Colfax. Elaine, hi.
Hi. If they wanted to limit the power of the governor and attorney general, why didn't they do it when Walker was the governor? And Tony Evers is a distinguished and kind and intelligent man. And I wish it would just let him do his job. Let's see what he's got. And the other thing, bottom line is, I think this is all just petty, childish, and ultimately very dangerous.
Elaine, thanks for the call. Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, Republican Assembly Speaker, has said, this is just kind of a civics lesson here. We're reconfiguring the balance between the executive and the legislature. Elaine and many others saying, okay, they've had 8 years to do that. Why now?
I think why now is pretty obvious in the sense that for 8 years they've had a governor in the same party. And for better or worse, they have expanded Walker's powers, by giving away some previous things that the legislature had done. And now that the parties are changing hands, they want to take some of that back. If that's a civics lesson, I don't know. It sounds more kind of petty, to use Elaine's words there, because they have had time. And even as late as July and August, some Republican lawmakers were musing whether they had given Walker too much power. That's kind of a little bit of a last-minute regret, if you were to ask me. There was certainly plenty of time to do that earlier.
And one thing we're not seeing, as far as I can tell, there were concerns raised by Eric Holder, among others, that what the Republicans would try to remove the governor from the redistricting process in 2 years. One of our callers mentioned gerrymandering and redistricting. That is, apparently there's no changes there. This could be one of the biggest battles, though, over the next couple of years, is redistricting.
Absolutely, and most likely our next set of lines will wind up in the courts again, which has happened the last several cycles, 2010 being the exception, largely because the governor of a separate party and the legislature haven't been able to agree. In this case, Evers will have a say in that. He'll have to sign a bill for Wisconsin's new lines after the 2020 census, but the Republicans in the legislature will have a first crack at drawing them. So unless they can magically figure out a way for Republicans to be happy with lines and Evers and the Democrats to be happy with lines, it's very likely to wind up in the courts, as the state's constitutional officers won't agree on what those lines should look like. It will be the major battle after 2020.
Go back to our callers now. Jerry is with us in Eau Claire. Jerry, hi.
Hello. What we need to do is we need to change this so that we don't have lame duck sessions. When you're fired from a business, they take your key and they show you the door. You don't get an opportunity to have revenge on the business for 2 months.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Arla, I've seen some other people suggest this over the years, in fact. Is there any way to get rid of this lame duck session between Election Day and when a new legislature and governor are sworn in?
Well, they did largely in Congress. We forget that before 1933, new members of Congress didn't take office for 13 months. So there was a year-long lame duck session before Franklin D. Roosevelt became president. A federal constitutional amendment changed that, so now there's only essentially 2 months between the election and the new U.S. Congress. We could conceivably do something similar here in Wisconsin and require that the legislature adjourn until a new governor comes in January. We'd have to mess around with the calendar some, but it's certainly a constitutional possibility.
Thanks for that call. And Arnold, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Arnold Schober is an associate professor of government at Lawrence University. We talked with him about the lame duck session in the state legislature. We'll have more on that tomorrow on the Ideas Network on the morning show starting at 6 a.m. and here on Central Time tomorrow after 4. We'll see what kind of voting has happened between now and then. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Issues in the transgender community have grown increasingly visible in recent years, from growing representation in pop culture to controversy over so-called bathroom bills and discrimination. Transgender issues are now a regular part of the conversation for a lot of Americans. In her new book, our next guest talks about her own experience as a transgender woman and what it's been like to live through that experience. Carla Ernst is a Wisconsin-based writer, author, and motivational speaker. Her new book is called Life Without Pockets, My Long Journey into Womanhood. She joins us in the studio. Carla, thanks a lot for coming up.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me here to Central Time. I'm just honored to be with a host that can say Fish Fry Fridays so clearly.
It's part of the job in Wisconsin.
I hope they pay you big bucks for those three words.
My boss is right here, so thank you.
Double his salary. That'd be great.
You tackle a lot in this book. This is your story, but also kind of a frequently asked questions for people on transgender issues. Why did you try to tackle all of this?
Interesting question. The FAQs, I think, is what started the book for me, because you get a lot of questions when people recognize that's what you are. And I think it started many years ago when you get these questions over and over again. So I said, you know what, let me put this all in one book, because there's so many questions from so many different perspectives. The time you grow up and the era, the geography, social, how society views it, everything, politics. So I think by putting it all in one book, it kind of got my story out, and with a real specific purpose to help people understand, not just transgender people, but I think more importantly, friends and family of those people they love, to better understand that, to maybe lead to a better sense of acceptance, because that's usually the challenge. It's usually not so much the gender identity itself, it's people in society trying to understand what it's all about.
And one, there's a lot of common themes in the book that I see. You tell your story, but you make it really clear your story is not the story of every person who's transgender. There may be common elements, but they're all unique and individual stories in a lot of ways.
No, we're all exactly identical. All stories are totally identical. I think obviously there's common themes. Even in writing a book, that's quite an undertaking. It took me about 4 years to write it. And I think when you look into it, research it, what else has been written on the topic, you look at that, then you put it away and say, okay, what is my story? What's unique? What's special about it? And essentially with the goal of letting people know about it and how you might be able to help them. So my story really was, as the book says, was growing up in the era I grew up in. Originally was raised in Chicago, a very large, happy Catholic family. Yet you have this inner secret, this sort of bizarre thing you don't know how to articulate it, because you don't know what it is. There was no resources, pre-internet. What could this be? Why am I different? But yet you keep pushing it away, saying, well, it'll go away someday. But of course it doesn't. And so that's what leads to not just the journey, but in this understanding of what that's all about. And I tell people, I never feel, the common word you hear is going through transition. In my case, I did not go through a transition, just a realization of who I was since birth. So this was not a surprise. It just took a while to get there. But that's who I am and what happened to me.
And somebody watching you in your life now, one reaction somebody might say, well, you're now pretending to be someone that you're not. And your experience was you spent the first chunk of your life trying to pretend you were somebody you're not. Now you're who you are.
Correct. And I think it's an interesting reverse paradigm, because you do go through that. I think what happened, at least in my case, was you have this inner deep secret and you finally become whom you are, yet you have to, I chose to retroactively tell everybody I met. And by going backwards, your people don't believe you. I say, oh, by the way, something a little bit different about me, you may not know, is I'm a woman. So first they don't believe that. And then until they meet me. And then people I know today, they simply don't know. I mean, as far as I know, that if I tell them I once had the body of a male, they too don't believe me. So we have this reverse argument that crosses somewhere. It's a bizarre comment to try to convince people opposite information, but that's been my experience.
People talk about it sometimes as a choice. Did this ever feel like a choice to you?
Not for a second. And I think that's what started the book. The book started out actually as a comment I got, as I say, a large Catholic family, the oldest, I would say smartest of seven. If any of them are listening, they might disagree and call in. But the youngest of the seven had actually, years and years ago, had raised that whole question, said he could not condone the decision I made. And I think that one comment got me to think and actually started writing an email back saying, let me try to explain what this is. At least in my case, it's hardly a decision. You are what you are, your authentic self. And so in writing the email got kind of long, turned into a 250-page book, and took 4 years to get the email out. But of course, it never went out, and I never sent that. But it really leads to so many different aspects of it that made it become a book and very, very comprehensive. So the choice issue, for my case, certainly not. And I think generally anybody who's going through any of these kinds of similar transitions in any of that broader community, I've never heard anybody say this is a choice.
talking to Carla Ernst. Her new book is Life Without Pockets, My Long Journey into Womanhood. Let's talk about the urgency of some of these issues. Statistically, transgender people more likely to commit suicide, often likely to be victims of hate crimes. And you write about your own experience with suicidal ideation, of being targeted for an assault because people identified you, they thought, as different. I don't know if they thought transgender in particular. Can you talk about the urgency of talking about these issues?
Well, I think in the issues, I have to step back and count my blessings. I've been very lucky. I have many people I know or friends and people I read about who have been less lucky. They've been ostracized, injured, and even killed. In my specific situations, I think the highlights of my lowlights, certainly I was mugged twice in Milwaukee for being transgender. Came out later. One went to court for many years and cracked my skull and left me bleeding on the pavement. They also took everything I owned, which was sort of sad, but I always put this under the dumb criminal area because they took my Mac and it went up to the satellite and back, said, here's where we are, come get us, and they arrested them. But the other one was a similar one, but I think the other one that was interesting to me that in central Wisconsin, unrelated to central time, a group who I knew from childhood realized who I was from childhood. And they took issue and they took me back to the back room and evangelized me big time. And after a couple hours of that, said that horrible things would happen to me. And they said, and they happened to sell, apart from gas, liquor, and ammunition, that they indeed would have me, quote, accommodated. They would kill me. And that's still out there. The target is actually real, and I know they would simply kill me. So that's a scary thing, and I don't get my ammunition there, but it's been pretty serious stuff. So I feel I'm okay. Most of my family's been very accepting. Friends have always been very accepting. Also, we're in a different era, too, with a post kind of Caitlin era, the way the world looks at it today. It's very, very different. So I've been very lucky.
Yeah, talk about, you were talking earlier about when you were a kid and you had this different secret and you didn't know what to make of it. When you first started to meet people or hear about people in the public and say, oh, wait, that they're going through something like me.
Well, I think early readings, you know, I'd sneak off to reference sections of my local public library and reading medical text, say, OMG, this is what this is about. This is me. And it's, you know, the Renee Richards of the world way back then until later in college. I was a music major part of my career. And Wendy Carlos, Virginia Walter Carlos, read these stories. Oh, my God, that's exactly who I am. So I think that's very compelling to realize you're not alone.
As you look at pop culture now, I mean, in the era you're talking about, and when I was a kid, if transgender issues came up or cross-dressing issues came up in pop culture, at best it was played for laughs, at worst as kind of a freaky, weird thing. Do you feel like pop culture is doing better now?
Media handles it much more thoroughly, much more comprehensive, and much more sophisticated, going away from sort of the Jerry Springer era of some bizarre thing to the Katie Couric's of handle some very effective documentaries on National Geographic and others. So media, very, very different.
The book is not out yet. There's been some advanced copies out, though, and I know, what kind of reaction have you gotten from people who've gotten a sneak peek at the book?
Well, first of all, the book is out. We're all fine books.
Oh, it is now. Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're all fine books, and not just good books are sold. There it is. So, in fact, I'm speaking tomorrow night at a bookstore in, here in Madison. Reactions vary. Very interesting response. One group of people tends to be parents of gender identity struggling kids, and they are looking at me for advice. And I refer to them on my website because there's so many challenges with that, and I'm not a doctor. But the challenges, I'm finding the questions about that. The other theme are people are saying this is way beyond transgender. It's about treating people with dignity and respect regardless of what group they're from.
And you talk about that. Toward the end of the book, you have a lot of questions that are often asked of you, and I think of a lot of transgender people that, you know, people are curious, but some of these questions cross that line in terms of treating people with dignity. What kind of questions don't you necessarily want to hear?
I guess the chapter heading is indicative. It's called Don't Ask. I picked 10 questions that people really have asked me. And one of them, I think the first one I say, people at fancy cocktail parties in New York would say, well, how do you have sex? So I said, how do you have sex? And so I think they say, well, that's not appropriate. Well, it's no more appropriate with me or anybody else. But the questions are unbelievably hysterical sometimes, but across the board and inappropriate.
So that said, people can be curious in a positive way. What kind of conversations are you hoping your book starts?
Well, I think it really gets to be around treating people with dignity and respect. And as you've seen in the book, it took quite a turn. A couple years into writing the book, I sadly lost a friend of mine who had a very talented school teacher in the school system, and she was ostracized by the administration and teachers. And after 10 years of that, it just got to her, and she sadly took her own life for being transgender. And there's a 42% incident of suicide among transgender people compared to the 3 or 4% in society. And that hit me really hard. She was a lovely, wonderful girl, and in that time, I made the decision to dedicate the book to her, but more importantly, to help if it prevents one life from being taken as a result of bullying, then this book's a success.
Can you leave us with some advice for maybe somebody out there listening there where you were when you were a kid? I'm different. I don't know what to do with this.
Well, Rob, I recommend don't change your gender. It's really hard. I think you do the guy thing so well.
Thank you.
That helps.
I'll stick with it.
Little cautionary tale there. But advice, I think, is be yourself. I think feel lucky in a world, particularly millennials today. It's so interesting when I speak to those groups. They think, well, why is there an issue with any kind of marginalized group? So I think you're seeing a whole different population. Think about it very differently, much more open, accepting, and understanding.
We'll leave it there. Carla, thanks a lot for coming up to the studio today.
Thank you, Rob.
That was Carla Ernst, a Wisconsin-based author, with us to talk about her new book, Life Without Pockets, My Long Journey into Womanhood. If you want to hear more about Carla and her book, as she mentioned, she'll be talking about it tomorrow evening at a Room of One's Own bookstore in Madison. That starts at 6 o'clock.